Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Susan Bida, and I'm your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com, a website for caregivers that is bringing this show to you today. The focus of our show is elder mediation for family caregivers, and to help shed light on this topic, I'm very pleased to introduce our distinguished guest, Dr. John Birchler. Dr. John Birchler is the co-owner of North Coast Conflict Solutions. He has been working in the mental health field since 1977 and is a mediator, psychologist, and certified critical incident stress management provider. John has also co-authored the book Elder Mediation, A New Solution to Age-Old Problems, and he wrote this with his wife, Patty Birchler. And she is a licensed clinical counselor and mediator. John presents extensively on topics related to mediation and conflict resolution and provides classes for mediators in training for the State of Ohio Conflict Resolution Center. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Boy, that does sound distinguished, doesn't it?
You are. Well, I'm very happy to have you on this show because I can't tell you how often, now that I've learned all about elder mediation and I've read your book alongside that you wrote alongside with Patty, how beneficial this could have been to my my family.
Yeah.
And so I'd love for you to tell us, let's start, how has elder mediation, I guess, changed since the time you wrote your book? And, you know, I think first, though, tell us, what is elder mediation for those who are really new to this out there in our audience?
Okay, that's a good starting point. In general, mediation is the use of a third party who's a neutral to help people in dispute to resolve issues that they need to be discussing and deciding about. Elder mediation is the use of a mediator like that in the areas that particularly concern how we care for elders, and it concerns money matters, it concerns placement matters, whether mom can stay at home or requires professional residential care or something else of that sort. It touches all the areas where disputes come in about how we take care of the older folks.
And this is usually a best place to start before, you know, going to a lawyer, I suppose. I mean, if
we
there's
like
conflict
so.
Within the family.
we like to think so, because so many unfortunate things can happen when you start off in an adversarial situation. And no matter how you slice and dice it, taking it to lawyers and fighting it out in court is adversarial.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I would know about that firsthand. Now, tell us about how. Now, you wrote the book in what year?
Oh my goodness! I think the second book was in 2008 or 2009, and I'm not even certain.
Okay. And has
not that terribly long ago.
Not that long ago. So about 2 or 3 years ago. And has elder mediation changed since the time you wrote your book? Is it pretty much the same? What's going on?
We think it's largely the same field, but the one thing that has really changed is the increased awareness of it, partly through publications such as the book, and partly because folks such as yourself are helping getting the word out. So there's a lot more awareness.
Well, great. I'm happy to do this because I think I'm a big fan of elder mediation because it could potentially save families, I mean, tens of thousands of dollars in unnecessary legal expenses by resolving issues prior, you know, before going to court and battling it out there. So I'm a big fan. Tell us, when does elder mediation work best? When should a family, you know, bring in an elder mediator?
When they realize that they have issues that aren't going to go away, they're likely to get worse, and there are multiple people who are stakeholders, They have many different opinions. They're dragging other unrelated conflicts into this conflict. They're not getting anywhere resolving this on their own. That's when they need help.
And what are some areas that you find generate the most conflict amongst family members and seniors? Is it living arrangements? Is it financial management?
I think you've just hit the big two, and they are, you know, where is the elder person going to live, and who's going to pay for it all? Because many people don't want to face the issue of somebody's mental status is changing, or his self-care ability and independence are changing, and he wants to stay at home or she wants to stay at home, and some family members want that person to stay at home, but it's not unanimous because other people see danger involved in that. So whether somebody can stay at home alone or needs to move in with a relative or needs care providers to come in constantly or somebody to move in with him, or whether he needs to go to a professional care such as assisted living or nursing home, that's probably the biggest one. It's most emotionally laden because of what it signifies in the life cycle of the person.
And it's mostly these issues that are most emotionally laden, as you say, that where the conflicts, that's why conflicts abound a lot in these particular areas?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
At the moment, I've got a counseling client whose elderly mother is diminishing in function, and she and her two siblings are just completely in different places about, you know, what the heck do we do next. And it's from leave her where she is to move her downstairs to I don't want any part of this, let me know when you've decided something, and just everyone for his own reason isn't able to make rational decisions about this.
Right. Now, can elder mediation help respond to emergency situations where a decision has to be made right away? So, you know, as you used in your example, sometimes there are relatives who really don't want to be part of a decision-making process, but a decision needs to include them, perhaps. I mean, what type of emergency situations would there be that would call for elder mediation?
I had a situation a couple of years ago where an 80-something widow was living in a nursing home and had deteriorated markedly. And she had four adult children, who one of whom lived local and the others came in from around the country, and they said this is sort of the gathering of the clans. Everybody knows this is likely to be, you know, mom's last week or so on earth. And they realized that there were significant issues that needed to be discussed and decided. And there wasn't a lot of time to do it. And they called me, they found me on the internet, and I was able to visit in the nursing home and met mom briefly, and then the four children and I went aside for an all morning long meeting. And we were able to help. I don't even remember what the issues were, but they were, I think they were financial more than placement issues, because mom was there and she wasn't going anywhere.
Right.
But they had very significant issues about inheritance and money that needed to be discussed. And mom just wanted to know, I don't care what you decide, just decide it and don't bust up the family. Tell me when you're finished. And that's what we did. We met all morning, and we went back to mom and told her, you know, it's all taken care of, mom, and you don't have to worry about a thing.
Wow.
It was very, very dramatic.
And that's the beauty of elder mediation. Now, what do you do in those instances where no one except for you, the mediator, wants to mediate? Like, what happens when you really get family members who just don't, you know, who just won't budge, who just won't cooperate?
Well, that's one of the shortcomings of mediation, and it comes with the territory. You can't resist a subpoena, but you can resist mediation because it's a voluntary process.
Right.
And you can't force somebody to sit down at the table and discuss anything with or without a helper. So in that case, the one or the ones who are willing to talk might take part in a limited discussion and realize that, well, we've still got these other two stakeholders out there who don't show any interest in taking part. Sometimes it comes down to who has guardianship or who has power of attorney, mm-hmm. or decision-making authority. And they want to bring everybody in because everybody has a stake, and sometimes they're put in the unfortunate position of having to proceed with decision making without the input of the others.
Right. Oh my goodness. I just have flashbacks as you know.
I didn't mean to alarm you.
No, I mean, it's just bringing up a lot of memories, unfortunate memories of situations, and I just I'm so glad you're here to clarify these issues that could arise, and the importance, as you said, of having, designated family members as powers of attorney or, healthcare proxies. I mean, very big proponent of people, getting their legal documents in order so that, obviously that helps the family quite a bit. In your encounters in elder mediation, do you see many families prepared with these type of end-of-life documents in place?
Certainly. Many of them have got everything in place, and there are still disputes. There can be one sibling who has all the power of attorney that he or she would ever need, but still people are fighting against that, and they'll say, I don't care what you've got, this is still our mom too.
Right.
So having the documents in place may make it possible for you to prevail in a court situation, but it doesn't make your brother like you any better.
That's true. That's very true. So tell us about qualifications for elder mediators. Should they have a nursing or a medical background? I mean, you have a background in psychology or psychiatry, correct?
Right. I'm a psychologist, mm-hmm. and we think it definitely helps in most areas of mediation to have a mental health background, because so much of this is emotional and psychological rather than the legal process of determining who's right and wrong. It's not that at all.
Right.
So, yeah, in the case of elder mediation, all the background that you can get is going to be useful. In my case, I've studied many of the issues of the aging process. I've worked in nursing homes through the years, and I'm still not as much of an expert as I could be. But then the whole process of mediation is about keeping the decision-making in the hands of the people who are going to be affected by it.
Right.
So when we are not experts in everything, we try to get the information that we need.
Right. So what type of, credentials should families be looking for in elder mediators?
That's a tough question, because it's not a field such as the law or psychology or medicine where you can show somebody your state license. And mm-hmm. I say that as the resident of Ohio. This varies from state to state, but in many states, including Ohio, there is no state credentialing of professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't show you my license, but somebody in another state may be able to.
Right.
If you are in a state like this, which does not have credentialing, then you have to do your due diligence as a consumer. Excuse me, a little scratchy throat here. You have to do your due diligence and ask somebody, what kind of background and experience do you have? And in my case, I can point to the training that I've had over the years and the experience that I've had over the years, and if somebody else might not be able to show you that.
Yeah. Tell us now about the affordability factor. Is elder mediator, how much does it typically cost for a family to hire an elder mediator? And how are costs determined?
It's extremely variable based on what kind of practitioner you hire and also based on geographic location. We've encountered, for instance, California practitioners who are attorneys in addition to being mediators, and they can command anywhere from $300 to $400 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
In other areas of the country, it's much more affordable. I know that in our own practice, our top fee is $150 per hour, and in some cases we have discounts and sliding scales, and there are other practitioners in the state who will start out at less than that.
Right.
So, but the hourly rate is only one factor to be considered. I told you about the family just a few minutes ago. They were facing legal decisions that, if they had taken it to court, could have taken months, if not years, and tens of thousands of dollars to resolve it.
Right.
And they were able to resolve it instead by themselves with a little structured help in the course of a morning for a few $100.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I consider the real cost, is not only what you pay, but what you save.
Of course.
And you may never know. You may never know the cost that you avoided.
Now, do you, for example, let's say a family approaches you for the first time and they feel that they're going to need elder mediation, do you have the ability to assess their situation and give them a sense of how long, how many hours it might take to actually help the family through a given situation? So they can kind of estimate.
I usually do. I'll ask people to come equipped to a first consult with some very specific questions so that I'll be able to get an idea of what they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I meet the people and I'll assess the not only the questions, but the dynamics of the group. You know, how many people are involved? How cooperative or uncooperative are they? What outside issues seem to be trying to intrude into the process? You know, how good a job can I do of controlling that and
right.
keeping the discussion focused?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of variables there, but I'll usually be able to say, "Yeah, boy, this looks like big trouble. You got a long haul here, or you know, if you just want to sit down and talk, we might be able to hash this out in 2 or 3 hours."
Right. Since we're in the middle of this, can we? I would love to share with the audience how they could learn about elder mediation and your own practice. Do you have a website address that we can direct our audience to?
Yes, and thank you so much for asking. It's www.ncs, that's North Coast Conflict Solutions, ncsmediation.com.
Terrific. And now, so let's say we have a family in Nevada or, you know, somewhere out on the West Coast. I mean, they could either do elder mediation. They can find elder mediators locally, or they can possibly utilize your services. I mean, do you do a lot of phone, over-the-phone type of services?
I try to limit the amount of work that I do by phone for the simple reason that there's such a richness of information to be gotten face-to-face.
Yeah.
And I know that nobody's going to fly in here from Nevada if everybody lives out there. So you might have to search the Internet or whatever other resources you've got in your local area. And that may be the local bar association, the local Supreme Court. If there's
okay.
a state mediation association, such as in Ohio,
I was actually wondering if there was a national website that would help people find elder mediators by local area.
Yes, the one big one is the Association for Conflict Resolution, and that is the big national organization, and they
okay.
have, and I have to apologize, I do not know their website offhand, but if you search in your search engine for the Association for Conflict Resolution. I believe it is ACR.net, but don't hold me to that.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
They can plug you into a provider by geographic region and by specialty area.
Okay. And I'd also like to remind our audience, if you're tuning in right now, you can actually call in with any questions. We're open to take questions during the last portion of this show. The number to call in is 347-857-3399, or you can actually email me some questions. I think you can probably post them on Facebook or Twitter, Twitter them to me at this moment. While we're waiting for questions, if we get any questions, if you are too shy to call in with questions, then I would suggest that you can also always email us questions right on the website at info@ecarediary.com. We're always we actually have a new expert Q&A section, so any questions you might have about elder mediation or conflict resolution, please feel free to email those to us, and John, maybe we can reach out to you and perhaps you can help us with some of these questions.
Okay. I'd be glad to take callers if they come in.
Okay. So John, some more about elder mediation now. Tell us about how, so I guess in the process of elder mediation, as you're sitting with a family, agreements are made.
Right.
After a certain time. Now, how are they enforced?
It's a good question. And again, here's a difference between what I do and what a court does, because agreements that are forged around my table do not have the force of law, and they are not necessarily legally binding. That's why we have to get everybody to buy in up front. So if we've got three or four siblings trying to figure out what are we going to do with Dad, we need to get everyone's input. We need to hear what this sibling wants, what that sibling wants, what this sibling's reservations or hesitations are. If there's any reason for you to not want this agreement or to want a different agreement, please say so now. We want everybody to be heard, concerns and all, so that by the end of the agreement, by the end of the day, and we write something down, everybody's on board with it. And that's where mediation is most useful. People are far, far more likely to comply with an agreement if they helped to write it in the first place. And if they've had the opportunity to object and have their objections heard before it goes to final version.
Great.
But once it's written down, it's a voluntary process. We hope
right.
that people stick to it. It may be that they come back with, well, it's now 2 months later and we tried this and it didn't work so well because one brother didn't do what he said. Then we might have to go back to the drawing board.
Right, right. Well, let's now turn to, I guess, some typical scenarios that you've seen faced by family caregivers mm-hmm. taking care of their elder loved ones. There's some cases in which you, I think, you typically see. One is that a family can't agree about whether a mom needs 24-hour live-in care immediately.
Right.
The son may set up an appointment to tour an assisted living facility, and he sees that his mother is not very willing to talk about it, and he can see that she's depressed about the thought of having to move to an assisted living facility. Her husband, his dad, supports her, and so it's now becoming an unpleasant situation. So tell us about an incident like this. This is pretty typical in your practice?
Oh, it's very common altogether. And, when we hear these very different opinions where a couple of children really, really want mom to be in institutional care and mom does not want to, well, we understand that much of that is very emotional. and it's hard to get unbiased opinions as to her needs. So one thing that's very useful is some kind of neutral assessment, and I don't do that because I'm not qualified to do that, and also because I'm the facilitator, not the I'm not here to evaluate mom's needs. So many people will get a geriatric assessment, which is available through hospitals around the country.
Mm-hmm.
A team will come out to evaluate an elder's needs in a variety of levels,
mm-hmm.
medical, social, financial, and so forth, and offer an unbiased opinion. Yeah, we think mom needs to be in some level of residential care.
Right.
And that may be the deciding opinion, although it's still left to the decision makers themselves.
Right. So this geriatric assessment could be done by, who provides that? Are these social workers we're talking about, or are these geriatric care managers?
There are typically teams with a variety of skills. There may be, there usually would be a medical doctor of some sort, either an elder psychiatrist or a gerontologist or, as you say, a geriatric care manager. And there can be a medical doctor, a social worker, a nurse. It can be any number of, or it could be a psychologist in some cases. As a whole team provides a multi-factored evaluation,
mm-hmm.
able to look at many, many areas of mom's functioning.
Great. And then they can I guess they would share their assessment with the son and of course the mom and dad, so that
right.
everyone's hearing the same information and
right.
and they can provide an adequate recommendation.
Mm-hmm. And it still may not sway everybody, and mom still might not want to go. But that becomes her choice unless and until she becomes not competent.
Yeah. Right. Now, this other scenario I think that you help provide is one in which, let's say, a father wants to live alone in the old family home indefinitely. I guess his wife has passed on, and he wants to continue living in the home by himself.
Mm-hmm.
There's a daughter involved, and she's scared that he's going to fall down and hurt himself, but he really just doesn't want to leave the house. So that sounds very familiar to me. That
yeah. Again, well, it sounds like any number of cases.
Sure.
And once again, we have to listen to what people really want, not just what they say they want. And when Dad says, "I want to stay here," it's not just because he resists change necessarily, but it can be because everything that makes his life meaningful is within arm's reach, including his church and his barber shop and his senior center and his grocery store that he's shopped for 40 years, and everything is right where he knows it, and he doesn't want to move, even if it's across town 15 minutes, because now everything has to be relearned and everything is unfamiliar.
Right. And this is what I think is so great about your practice, because you have the psychology background and the counseling background to really understand sort of what's beneath the surface going on with some of our elder loved ones. Some of us children don't necessarily know how to really, I think, go beyond our own emotions as we watch our parents age and really try to put ourselves in their shoes.
It's amazingly tough.
Yeah.
Because, again, we know what these changes signify.
Yes. Well, John, I want to thank you so much for being on our show today. I want to remind our audience that you can learn more about John and about elder mediation on his website, www.ncsmediation.com. Thank you, John, for your time today, and I'd like to invite our audience, thank our audience, first of all, and invite you to join us next Tuesday, July 19th, at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, when I will be interviewing Vicki Elner, who is the founder of the Senior Umbrella Network of Brooklyn. And she serves the needs of, which serves the needs of the aging population. And yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just want to make sure I get to say thank you for
absolutely.
Having me on.
Absolutely. No, we really appreciate having you on the show. I just want to tell our audience that if you want to learn more about our upcoming shows besides today's show, which will be available on archive or next week's, we have these shows available on a weekly basis and we hold them live. You can visit us at ecarediary.com. Under our blogs tab, under any one of the options available there, we have radio, video, webinars, expert Q&As, and we invite you to check out our content. Thank you so much. And, John, have a wonderful July and rest of the weekend, and we
Thank
look forward
so
to
much.
Having you back.
All right.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.